man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
All right, welcome everyone to episode number 16 of Broken by Concept, or BBC, as you guys like to call it. This is, my name's Nathan Mott, and then this is Coach Curtis, the man without the last name. Sorry, the last name is Curtis. I keep forgetting that.
That's correct.
The only man in the world, first name's Coach. Do you reckon that's true? Do you reckon someone's named their kid Coach? There must be at least one person out there, right?
Surely, definitely.
You really think
even,
so?
It doesn't even sound that bad.
Coach. It's like, oi, Coach. Yeah. Hey, Coach.
Yeah, it doesn't sound that bad. But yeah, we saw the feedback from you guys talking about the format. And
which was very, very helpful.
Yeah, very, very helpful.
It seems like the cow, and we did, remember we were talking about it, it's like, what will people think of the, like this sort of setup? And it's like, there's something you can't put on being in physical presence with someone. And then literally, we said that, and in the comments, that's what everyone else said. But people literally said they can't describe it. It's like, oh, actually, I think someone said like they like the intimacy of us being, you know, in the same room together. But I was surprised. Were you surprised?
Yeah, how much people wanted, like, really liked the couch format?
No, it was unique. I mean, every podcast, yeah, but whether it's unique or not, what we do now.
Whether it's unique or not, though, it's people said they just liked it. I don't think I ever heard the word unique.
No, but that's like, why they like it, I reckon.
You think so?
There's an element of uniqueness, man. Definitely. It's unlike anything that people don't do that. It's everything's online nowadays, and ours are just like in person.
They like the cheap look.
They like the cheap look, even though it's more expensive than doing this.
Yeah, it's almost
like this looks more professional. Like this looks more professional, but it's actually cheaper than doing it properly with like the podcast mic and everything.
And like the camera, like the whole setup cost of our couch setup is probably what, $2,000?
More than that, including the camera.
Two and a half. Yeah. The camera's the big, that's like, you know, 1400, right? The tripod, the mics, the
recorder, everything.
The recorder. Yeah. So it's about $2,500. And this is like $20. Actually, no. It's because we set this up so quickly because we already designed. I mean, the way we do stuff is for this type of stuff.
Yeah. We already had the webcam
and the mic and I guess computer, but it's probably like $1,800 ish, probably this setup.
Something like that.
You know,
but so what we're going to do is do a bit of both. It seems like we'll do this for now until we kind of get
this is temporary because I need to order. I'll actually do this after this podcast. I'm going to order those new XLR cables. They should come, maybe not by the next two episodes. We'll see. Maybe before. Yeah. But this is the temporary solution that we need. This is what I need to do while we wait for our new cables that broke on us last episodes.
And then we'll still do this though when we have guests. We'll do this when we have guests.
Plan is. Couch all the time, us two, and then whenever we have guests, like so we talked about in-person guests as well. There is some people we can potentially get who's in Melbourne, like people in the scene, but our setup is not designed for three people. And even I was even thinking as well, Curtis, the size of our couch, it's going to be hard to fit three people in there, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that we just do, and I think we should really start. I mean, a lot of people as well in the comment section said that they would be really interested in guests. So we can just do this setup, the online thing for guests, and then everything else is just via the couch. So that's the plan of attack moving forward. Let us know your thoughts, but I think that's the general consensus. I think we're all happy. We can all agree on that.
I like it.
And yep, that's that. So. Let's jump into the League of Legends side of things, Curtis. League of Legends, we've been playing that game for a long time now.
Yep.
Season 10 officially ends in 2 days.
Well, I believe when I clicked on the client, it was like an hour and
you 11, mean a day.
Sorry, a day and 11 hours.
Yeah. And we're not sure if the patch, we had to talk about this. I'm actually not sure. Does the patch hit as soon as the season ends or... There's like some sort of, now that I think of it, there must be some sort of intermission. It's like season ends and then like a day later, the patch, you know?
Yeah, it's never like, been like that. Patch.
Yeah, okay.
It's never gone instantly from what I can remember. It's going to be about a day or something like that.
So can you remember this time last year, Curtis, when all the new changes and stuff came out? So remember the big one for this season was Dragon Soul. Can you believe it? That was a Dragon Souls wasn't a thing. It's like we're so used to it now. It feels like it's been in the game for ages.
Yeah, I was actually
Do you remember what your initial thoughts were for Dragon Soul? Like the Dragon Soul and the Elder Dragon.
The Elder Dragon. Well, actually, I remember thinking about the Elder Dragon when it first came into the game, and I was thinking to myself, no one's going to get the Elder Dragon anyway. So it didn't really...
pretty irrelevant, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was irrelevant for Solo Queue anyway, like, especially since I wasn't really competitive, and I was thinking, well, games are very rarely going to go that long. And then I still thought that... Rift Heralds were too valuable. So I'm like, okay, these are nice. These Dragon Souls are nice, but, you know, it's not like... it's not going to be as game-changing as Rift Heralds. When Rift Heralds were introduced into the game, that shifted big. The game.
Yeah, because you're literally breaking towers. You can't store our game. You can't store towers, you know? You literally can... someone can just take it and break a tower, you know?
And I actually think that the Elemental Dragons were a really good change.
Yeah.
Because
people saying... did anyone say... because, you know how it's like everyone's like... really panics and stuff in the off-season. It's like, oh, Riot's ruined the game. Was there that discussion, you remember, about that? People were sort of just, like, open to it, right? People were just sort of saying which dragons were busted, right?
I think a lot of people were like, yeah, no, a lot of people thought that... there was never, like, oh, my God, Riot's going to break the game and stuff. I never saw that sort of stuff at the start of this year. Or the end of last year, sorry. And I think the only reason the reaction's been like that this time, Nathan, is because you say this all the time. People love being comfortable. They hate change.
Mm.
Right? And when something scary changes...
because they don't know. They're like, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen, you know, this next season. I mean, maybe this isn't the season Riot does break the game. But, yeah.
That's kind of being possible. Like, how would that be possible, Nathan?
It's not. There was actually part of me thinking it, because I was actually just doing some research looking at the changes now. I was thinking... like, there's still things about the game that just doesn't change about League. So part of me thinks that, like, I'm just going to go back into solo queue. Yeah, there's new items I need to figure out. I mean, there actually is a lot of change in terms of the jungle, like in terms of Gromp is now gives health and mana. It's not the Scuttle Crabs anymore. Did you know that?
Whoa, I didn't know that.
So that's pretty big. And it's much harder to kite camp, so it's really going to affect... really going to affect Rain Champ's kiting in the jungle, like, big time. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I think the jungle meta could change significantly, but I got a pretty open mind. But there's also a part of me that thinks nothing will change.
Right. Okay. I want to go on for the little tangent here, Nathan. Right, and then we'll come back to the... because I think the preseason changes, we'll talk a bit about that more.
Okay.
But I want to go on a tangent here. You just said a really interesting thing. You said, I just think that some of these things in the game... like, despite the changes, it's just going to be played the same. Which is interesting because at the moment, I've been trying to theorycraft in my brain what the actual fundamentals of League of Legends are. Okay. Now, I'm going to be doing a video soon on my channel talking about drills and how to utilize drills to improve specific parts of your game. In reference to specifically the micro aspects of the game, maybe your map awareness and some little things like this. Now, I have what I call a mid lane fundamental series, and I got things in there called trading. I have like roaming, wave manipulation, tempo, like all these things. Okay. Yes, these are fundamentals to mid lane, but they're not fundamentals to League of Legends. Now, there's a coach in my Discord who kind of helps out and just does community peer review, VOD reviews, and helps people improve. His name's Illidia. And he introduced me to, shout out to Illidia. He's a awesome dude. He actually introduced me to this, jiu-jitsu coach. And this jiu-jitsu coach, he talks a lot about drills and how to utilize drills to, improve, you know, their game, how to improve your game in jiu-jitsu. Now, I actually found this video on one of his YouTube channels about the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu and how to teach jiu-jitsu. And he says he actually compares teachers in other dojos, whatever they're called, dojos or whatever they are. They teach jiu-jitsu through techniques and through, specific techniques. which I'm assuming the league comparison would be teaching league through champion mastery, or maybe teaching league through teaching someone wave management, or teaching someone how to take a good trade. Like, it's like more of like a technique, but they're not
champion mastery is not a technique.
Okay, I would say, okay, more than wave management and then trading.
Like
and,
specific skills, right?
Yeah, yeah, specific elements of the game, things you can do. Rather, but these aren't the underlying fundamental things of the game. And then it got me thinking, okay, what would be the comparison? And so the things he used for jiu-jitsu actually was he talked about like base, angles, and connection. Very like fundamental, like he's a base in terms of your base with your body to the ground, in terms of how gravity plays a factor.
Connection's an interesting word.
Connection with you and the and your opponent, literally body to body.
You see how interesting is that? That's I mean, we're talking about fighting here, and you hear the connection, you're like, it's what the hell opposite, does that mean? Man.
And it's got me thinking, I'm like, okay, how does this apply to League of Legends? What are the absolute fundamentals, underlying fundamentals of the game? And it got me thinking, okay, well, okay, let's actually bring it. Let's actually start from a very practical manner and let's like break it down. Okay. So we've got, at the end of the day, our objective within the game is to kill the Nexus. Okay. We want to kill the Nexus. Whoever kills the Nexus wins. How do you kill the Nexus? Well, in order to kill the Nexus, you got to kill towers. Towers are in the way. All right. Well, how do you kill towers? Well, you kill towers by either being stronger than the enemy, and like either having the ability to like build waves and hit tower,
or the enemy not being there.
Or they're literally dead and not there, whatever. Mm. And you get damage onto the towers.
Then but I guess you'd have to take a step back there. If they're dead, that means you're stronger than them. Usually stronger. Then, or I mean, you outplay.
Or outplay them. Okay, let's. Okay, so then how do you outplay or how outplay do you become someone. Stronger?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. How do you outplay someone? You've got to be stronger, usually.
No, you don't have to be stronger.
Okay. Let's say majority of the time we're getting damage to the tower. Let's make it simple. Is that you got to be stronger? Majority of the time you're going to be stronger to actually hit the tower. It's very rare that I'm ever in a situation where I'm weaker than the enemy and I'm hitting tower.
Okay, either because that's fair enough.
I'm not going to have
very few situations where, I mean, let's say you outplay them, you kill them, and then you're probably lower. You're probably really low anyway. If they were stronger than you, you're probably really low. You could have outplayed, but you need to reset anyway and come back. Yeah.
Again, 95% of the time, you're going to be weaker. You're going to be stronger than the enemy if you're hitting the tower. Unless the enemy just like pushes and roams and then they get kills. But even then, those moments.
So you're saying the objective is towers. Towers are super important. Is that what you're putting a lot of emphasis on towers here?
Yes, towers are really important. Okay, towers for the sake of getting to the Nexus.
Of course, The only way you can get to the Nexus is by breaking towers.
Okay.
And you've got to go a step back, right?
Yeah, let's go a step back from that.
Let's go back and back.
So, okay, if you can't, maybe it's towers, and then in order to get towers, what's the easiest way to get towers? Be stronger than your opponent.
That's right.
Simple level. Okay, how do you become stronger than your opponent? Well, what does that mean? What does being stronger than your opponent mean? It means having more items.
More gold.
More items and experience. It's actually items and experience. And then gold. And how do you get more items? You get more gold. And how do you get more experience? You get more farm. So essentially more farm is what you need to get. You need to get more farm. Or you get gold from killing them. So, okay. So if we've distilled this all the way down to getting resources, getting experience and gold, okay. Then how do we get experience and gold? How do we do that?
You kill the damn minions, Curtis. That's how you do it.
Okay, you kill minions. But a lot of the time, this is where things get very a little bit too theoretical. But for the sake of this, I just want to throw this out there.
Throw it out there, Curtie.
Okay.
Throw it out to the internet.
Yeah, and this would be good to get feedback from you guys in the community. And this is just like a thought experiment.
Not feedback, like create discussion.
Yeah, just discussion. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, given I want gold and experience, what's the – or if I want to have items to be stronger than my opponent, how do I do that? Well, generally, I need to have some form of threat on the enemy.
To allow you to get those minions.
Well, threat does a lot of things. Mm. Okay, let's say this, for example. Okay, let's actually first define threat and say why it's so important. I would say threat is the ability to out-trade someone or the ability to kill someone. It's the ability to just win a trade over someone.
Well, so you have the ability, someone. But it's not always possible, right? Maybe ability is the wrong word. Is it?
No, the possibility?
Threat, because threat. Is possibility a better word here? I feel like it is. What do you think?
The possibility of...
Because think about it, because if like the way that I view ability, if it's an ability, why would you just not hit the ability button and they insta-die? You know, it's like no, like they have to misstep or something.
No, I would, okay. Or they don't. Well, the thing is, Nathan, you don't always want to use your damage because that's where like holding... Well,
then your threat's holding, gone. Okay, and then your threat's gone. It's like more guarantee.
Yeah, then just, so it's like a short period of time, right? So I think threat is the ability to be able to damage someone or out-damage someone and kill them, or kill them, one or the other.
So okay, let's use an example. When would a mid lane champion give a specific matchup, which who has threat over someone else in a specific time in a game? What's an example?
Okay, a perfect example would be Fizz at level 6 or Zed at level... Okay, so let's say Zed versus Orianna at level 6.
Okay.
At level 6, post first base, whatever, Zed has a Dirk. Orianna maybe's come back with like an Amplifying Tomb and a Doran's and maybe even one Cloth Armor, something like that. At level 6, there's a period in time where... there's a lot of kill threat onto that Orianna, a shit ton of kill threat. And if Orianna
which will allow Fizz to get free minions, like,
or Fizz. This is where it gets complicated because it depends on the jungle matchup, but it can depends on who's missing on the map. It depends on the amount of vision. It depends on the game pace. It depends on a lot of things. But what it usually does is that it actually allows Fizz or Zed to, have a lot more presence in the lane and push up very aggressively and sometimes get minions or get waves in that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to. Because...
So does the Orianna have...
Because Orianna can walk up and use Q, or she can like use abilities freely without being scared, because if Orianna uses Q forward, then she has no resistances because her ball gives her resistances, Nathan.
Yeah, okay.
So that's how, as Orianna, you actually want to play kind of proactively reactive in the sense you want to hold your ball onto you and keep sending the wave and keep the wave in a really good spot.
Just do all
because if you randomly just throw out your QWE onto like a Fizz or something, the Fizz can just like chew past you or something, or E over it and just like one shot you sometimes.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway,
so in the situation, Curtis, does Orianna have any threat in any way?
Yeah, short trades. She does.
And this so is where she does have an element of threat.
But the level of threat changes with the wave state. So wave state and threat go hand in hand.
So wave state is really important now.
Wave state is very important because... Okay. But this is where it's like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Does the wave state generate the threat, or does the threat allow you to get the wave state? It's a bit of both, I think. For some champions, threat or the perception of threat allows you to do whatever you want with the wave. Whereas other champions, getting the wave in a certain position gives you the threat, creates threat. Perfect example would be Aurelia. Like Aurelia in certain wave state or certain situations in the lane is so incredibly threatening. And then in other situations, she's not threatening at all because of just the wave state, because she has no room to chase you down.
Yeah.
Okay. And then actually her threat can go down through the floor as well. If she uses E and misses E, she like basically always needs E to kill you majority of the time, I'd say. Same with Zed's W. If Zed doesn't have W, then he's actually has no threat no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, it's just dog shit. So what I'm getting at here is that threat essentially, is such a deeply, a fundamental part of the game that dictates everything that happens in the laning phase or in the game in general. And an example of this would be, imagine if you're versing a champion, and this is why, by the way, I roast people who coaching clients when I see a VOD, and they're sitting in lane with no mana.
Because they have zero threat. And then they can't get resources.
So if you get no... So think about how bad this is. If you have no mana, you have... no threat because you literally can't use abilities.
Threat also actually just quickly, it also allows you to deny resources.
Yes, it does. But it can do both. It can allow you to get more because it can allow you to build waves sometimes, which allows you to get the enemy raptors or something like that, or take the enemy buff or whatever.
Mm.
Or and then get tower plates or whatever sometimes with the built wave. And it can also allow you to freeze and deny resources sometimes. Because you can zone them past the wave or something like that. Zone them from XP range. That's very common in top lane especially. So what I'm getting at here is if you go right? Let's just say you're playing Syndra and you're versing a Fizz. And the Fizz is completely no mana.
Mm.
What the hell is Fizz going to do?
He's a minion with like an extra
literally
health.
Literally a minion. Yeah, with a bit of extra health. And so this is why you got to be so careful about mana rationing and resource rationing. And this is why there's certain champions that aren't good for learning fundamentals like Katarina. Why
don't you don't really learn that? Yeah,
Yasuo as well. You don't have a mana pool. And rationing out resources is an incredibly important part of mid lane. At some point or another, you're going to play a champion with mana, and if you don't know how to ration your resources, then this thing happens. You go you're a bot, then what happens, your threat goes through the floor, you have zero threat, the enemy can control the wave how they want, they can reset whenever they want, they can take good trades if they want, they're going to win every single potential 2v2 mid-jungle skirmish, they can do anything they want. The analogy I like to use is like, it's like you're just versing literally a training dummy. You're literally just versing a training dummy. So threat is literally League of Legends.
Mm.
And
it gives you the ability to get resources, deny resources, and that's it.
What's below threat? I was trying to draw a diagram. I've got an X. I was trying to think. Like, if I were to draw a tree, I don't think this is the right diagram. You can't really see here. But I was trying to draw a tree because the guy in Jiu-Jitsu, he was talking about how, like, in Jiu-Jitsu, you have, like, the main trunk of the tree and the roots are, like, the core fundamentals of Jiu-Jitsu. Like he said, like, you got it was base and angles, whatever it was, and then the main branches off it are like the main other main fundamentals as well, but they're not the core fundamentals. That's where like connection come into play and things like that, and then all the branches that kind of follow off, and there's trillions of iterations, they're all like the techniques and then counter to those techniques and then counters to the counters and then counters to the counters to the counters. It goes on forever, and that's the same for League. You can go on forever. Because there's always a counter move to every situation. So what I was thinking was, okay, if we've got, okay, you need golden resources. I want to get golden resources. Threat allows you to do that because if you have threat, how the hell are you going to get golden resources? Blah, 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 blah. What is below threat? And I don't know. I've come to a dead end. I don't know. I was thinking, is it like pressure? It's not pressure because pressure doesn't actually...
You can't just switch it on and off.
No, pressure's actually further up. Pressure is something you get as a result of being strong.
Yeah.
It's a byproduct of being strong.
That's right. Because again, it comes back to threat. Threat gets you strong in the first place to have pressure.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So what I would like to open this discussion to the community, or like to people listening, is like, what is below threat? I don't know. Or is threat even a good way to explain it? Maybe there's a word not in my vocabulary that would better... exemplify
what's the base of League of Legends.
Well, because I don't know, I've only used threat because threat's the word that I've used for a very long time since I was a head coach. Like, I don't know what else to call it because it's that feeling. I talk about that in my videos all the time. It's the feeling of being able to do something, and you can use threat as long as you're aware of it. It's very powerful tool. That's where lane positioning comes into play, because lane positioning and aggressive lane positioning is you understanding you have threat and positioning in a certain way. So you're exerting threat without giving it away. Because if you use your abilities, then you're giving away the threat. And then you can like force them to like miss CS. You can force them to miss position or position to one side of the lane where your jungler is going to come in and loop around, whatever it is. Yeah, it all ties down from threat. So super interesting little concept there. Maybe we're getting a little bit too theoretical here. I don't know. But I do see value in figuring this out. Because if we are able to find some form of system and put it neatly, whether it's a tree and a tree trunk, whether it's like a pyramid or something like that, then once I would know that this is in place, then I could actually maybe start to create videos on like how we can tie these concepts together to teach better.
That's the key thing, to teach it better. to teach you. Well, we were talking about this the other day as well, like looking back at some of my old stuff, like there's too much we assume that people know that we just do subconsciously, which actually holds us back as teachers.
Hmm. Yeah, I've had
And having a beautiful model, like, you know, what you're trying to come up with, to be like, this is actually, you know, let's bring it back. Like, I can teach a player from just hit level 30 to understanding, let's say, to the baseline to like platinum 4 or platinum 1 just by following this model that's consistent. That's the key thing. It consistently gets people results.
Well, in jiu-jitsu and other forms or other mediums, whatever it is.
Of fighting.
Not even just fighting, in sports as well. They know how to take someone who's literally never done
touched it. Touched a ball, yeah.
Well, yeah, like guitar. They know exactly how to go from...
Okay, do you remember how... Do you have noob? A sport that you remember you learning, Curtis, that you had a model you could follow that you learned really, really quickly? Is there anything like tennis, swimming, football?
I never got taught properly in soccer.
So you just have bad like coaches.
They never gave me the fundamentals.
Yeah, okay.
Like, there was no fundamentals of soccer going on when I did coaching. It was like, all right, kick the ball. It was drills.
Yeah, drills.
But the way, this is why I love this jiu-jitsu coach. He talks about why the drills work and why certain things, like the function of it. So, for example, this is what I wish I learned, okay? In certain sports, let's just take soccer, or in Europe, they call it football, so we don't get confused here. Football and soccer. Like, why does you kicking the ball at a certain point of your foot generate more force? What's the point of doing that? Or why do you use the head in a certain area to do the ball?
Can the answer be because it just goes further?
Yeah, well, maybe
do you need to go that far back, or you can't understand things properly and then take things to the next level if you don't understand why?
No, because I feel like,
because let's say if I'm learning, right, and I learn something, right? Let's say to kick a football, like AFL, we're talking about AFL.
Okay,
let's talk
about AFL, footy, yeah.
Australian football. So I would just learn myself. It's like, oh, okay, this works. I can kick this way, and just the ball, it just feels better off my boot or something like that, right?
Okay, no.
I never tried to think about why, just like it just does.
No, okay, if we think about it even more, the problem we're trying to solve, let's say with AFL, you got the footy. Where the coaches should start is like, maybe not with young kids, maybe with older. It's like, we're trying to figure out a way to get the most power into our kicks. Because the more power, the longer our passing can get, or then the more accurate our passing can get. And if we have more accurate passing,
it is. Well, does power equal accuracy though, Curtis?
I think it does. Oh, no, control does. Over the ball.
Control over the ball.
Because if you don't know how to manage your power, how are you going to have accuracy?
Yeah. No, but let's say you're just trying to get the ball as far as possible. Yeah. Sometimes you're going to sacrifice accuracy, you know? Like you know how the commentator will be like, he just drives it down?
Like,
you know what I mean? Like, there's no accuracy going on. Like, okay, you're just doing a rough location.
Well, that's great, because that's what I would want to know. It's like, why are we learning the things that we're doing? Why do I have to put my hand here? Or why am I even learning to handball here in this situation? Because it feels like it's all expected that you understand why we're doing things rather than like...
Yeah, again, because the answer is it just works.
It just works rather than like why. Because this guy goes into the absolute fundamentals, you know?
Yeah.
And I just respect that so much. And he's able to get a beginner to like a master of jiu-jitsu. This is great quality teaching. I feel weak when I coach sometimes lower ELO players, because I feel like I'm more effective at coaching, say, someone from like diamond 4 to challenger than someone from gold to diamond, even though, because I'm still developing that skill set, because I've only been coaching high ELO players for such a long time, right? So I'm still developing that skill set now. And it hasn't been towards the end of this year where I've realized how much was missing on just the pure micro element of the game. My initial assumption when I first started coaching was that the micro element of the game wasn't important to touch on. Or I thought that was just like a given. Maybe subconsciously I thought that was just a given. But what I realize now is that what that ELO deal has actually made me realize, and actually before that I made that video on how to increase map awareness and stuff, was that the reason people die to ganks is actually a micro element in a weird way, because they literally can't control their character, which means they can't direct it. They're not looking at the right things. So they're so they're not comfortable enough to move their character without looking at their character, which means their eyes literally don't have time to look at the minimap. They're not able to identify the times in which they should be looking at the minimap.
Yeah.
It's like, so the micro element of the game expands out to impact the macro or more knowledge-based elements of the game. But I thought I never knew that. This was only something I learned in the last month or whatever, month or two, whatever. And this is why the deeper I've been going, the more I've been able to realize what I'm missing in my coaching. We need to go back to these fundamentals, Nathan. We need to figure this out. What is missing?
Well, I'm thinking about this for me, right, for jungle. Threat in jungle, like the maximum extent it goes is like, okay, so think about it. You don't really have, okay, so in high elo, you'll get contested on every camp possible, right, in high elo. You know what I mean? You have to like really think about, okay, can I get contested on camps? So in lower elo, it's like you're probably going to get away with doing your camps pretty safely. So it's literally PvE. You're not even playing. You're just playing like a farm simulator game, you know? Okay. And then it's like, okay, well, then the first option for threat is the crab because people fight over crabs, right? So that's like the first potential fight. Well, again, we're talking about low elo here. But I mean, this also can count for high elo games because sometimes you just do it just as both stand and clear, right? I'm playing Eve. I'm against the Warwick. Warwick has more threat over me because he's just a stronger champion than me. There's nothing about wave manipulation, wave states is just like, well, I mean, well, then the jungle version of wave manipulation wave state is like, yeah, you got to look at your laner's waves if they can help you on the crab or you have to concede the crab, right?
Oh, but I think you're thinking about this wrong, Nathan.
Go on.
The way I would view it is a more holistic approach. Is like, I want to be... I think League comes down to jungle and support are two niche roles in the sense that you're doing one of the two things. You're either getting someone else strong to help them have more threat, or you're increasing.
At the end of the day, skill threat's still incredibly important. It's like, yeah, so you could be assisting the threat.
Yeah, you could be assisting. No, you can. Yeah, literally increasing someone else's threat level. So I kind of feel like Nathan,
So what does it not apply to jungle? Like, what are you getting out here, Curtis?
So what I'm getting is that it does, but it's at a higher level. So think about it. Say you're playing Hecarim. The reason you do your path is to be as threatening as possible.
To be as strong as possible, yeah. Sorry, yeah, the same thing. You're getting resources to be as strong as possible.
Yeah. So, because if you understand what you're actually doing on your champion at the most fundamental level, the reason this is important, the whole reason I brought this up in the first place is because this is what allows for people to learn by themselves. Like, if I can translate this information into the fundamentals, then people can go into their own VOD reviews and figure out the solutions to these problems, because they know what they're trying to figure out. Okay, if you think about it like this, Nathan, you play Hecarim. Now, there's a lot of paths you could do, right? Given you get a leash, there's a lot of paths. You can skip certain camps. You can do three camps and insta recall, get your other port, your machete. You can do three camp into gank. You can do three camp into gank mid or three camp into gank top. You could do, for some weird reason, a weird invade given the enemy jungle, whatever it is. There's probably not hundreds, but it's probably in the double figures of amount of things that you can do in the first portion of the game.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of making that choice, given all the variables in the game, at the most fundamental level, it is essentially the problem you're solving is, how can I make myself as strong as possible, or my team as strong as possible? You're doing one or the other.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing.
Yep. Which will allow me to get objectives like dragons and rift tails and towers.
Which
and
allow you to get the nexus. Yep, or allow you to kill people, which allows your teammates to kill the tower.
To get more resources to be able to
kill the resources tower. To be able to kill towers. Okay, so that's at the most fundamental level. That's the problem you're trying to solve.
That's right.
So I think and the reason this is important, again, is I feel like we get so caught up on the semantics, but we don't even know what problem we're trying to solve anymore. Especially when it comes to high elo reviews.
Yeah, it's true. We do lose the problem sometimes, don't we?
Like, what the hell are we doing here in the first place? Like,
everyone knows about a subconscious BB. You go far down track. It's like, it comes down to,
like, how do I win the game?
And like, thinking about a way of, win the game. That's the key thing. How do I win the game versus people just thinking about solo kills? Looking at this specific situation, how could I have played it better? It's like, let's take it back here. Let's go back here. It's like, was this even necessary to win the game?
Yeah, go more. Let's just say there's a 2v2 skirmish between top jungle. So you're like, say you're on the Krugs or something, and like you see the enemy, you see the enemy jungle in the river walking up to gank your top laner. Like there's a situation there, or a situation where you have the decision to make. You can either ping your top laner back, or you could like maybe counter gank, depending on what happens. Then, okay, most reviews will go, okay, let's see what happens. You go into it, you look at how maybe you could have played the micro better or whatever it is. But essentially, it should be instantly, what do I need to do to win this game right now? Okay, I want to be stronger than my opponent so I can get more objectives. Okay, or I can get these resources two ways. I can get these resources by either denying the enemy resources, or I can get more resources by winning the skirmish and killing them.
So there's actually a lot of situations. Okay, now that I think of it in terms of winning the game as quickly as possible, efficiently as possible. I've definitely reviewed a lot of my games and a lot of my coaching clients' games. We're going for a kill. They actually get the kill, but which means net resources for them. But it actually potentially lost them the game, because then they lose a completely other side of the map. Let's say that was their win condition or something like that. So how does that factor into things, Curse? Because I'm getting resources for that person, but I'm actually not winning the game.
And this is
lost the game.
So this is the reason why I was kind of hesitant of bringing this up in the first place. League is so much more complex than all of these traditional sports. All right. The reason being is that.
Hold on, you sure you can say that, Curtis? Because the difference is that you, like, let's just think about your situation. You've researched and studied the game for years. You haven't done that for any other sport. Like, you really think you can say that? What do you think? I'm challenging
because
you.
Because the game changes.
Because the game changes. So just because of the fact that the game changes is that the game's incredibly complicated. But then you go back to, again, Curtis, that you said that there's lots of things in the game that doesn't change.
No, but literally the patches change, the champions change, the values change. Think about a game like tennis. Tennis is tennis.
So because games don't change, it makes it not as complicated as league.
I think that's a big factor, because the priority of objectives literally changes. Think about the priority of like in an NFL game. At the end of the day, you want to score more points than the enemy.
Yeah, you can say that about League. It's the exact same thing. At the end of the day, you want to kill the Nexus.
Okay, listen, but let's just say they added in a whole new thing in the game, in NFL, where like there's a fucking weird circle hole, and if you shoot the ball through there, you get like 10 points. It's a whole new thing. The same thing with League. So it's like they just randomly introduced Dragon Souls and the Elder Dragon, Rift Heralds. You know, they're just adding completely new things into the game. Like, if you get, like, Dragon Soul a lot of the time, you just win the game.
Yeah.
It means that you kill the Nexus. Or you get Elder. Right. You just basically means you kill the Nexus.
Yeah.
Or, like, a Baron or, like, a Rift Herald. You get two early Rift Heralds, you get that early amount of gold, that can be enough to win the game. Because you just snowball out of control.
Okay.
And it's also that element to the game, Nathan. What traditional sport has the snowballing aspect? Can you think of one?
There's definitely momentum in sports.
There's momentum. I would agree with that. But literally, like, what happens second 10, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It will affect what, like, other than that, okay, let's say if I think about like a basketball game, right? To score someone, you could eventually figure out to score a point where there's no counterplay, because you just literally put in all your energies, more energy and effort than someone else, right? But you can't do that for League. You could put in as much energy. You could play something mechanically perfectly. If they have more resources and stuff, they still just one shot you, you're dead.
Well, the reason
so you're probably
is,
right.
Yeah, there's no. I mean,
there's no game that snowballs. Yeah,
there's no game that is just like that. Cumulative. It just adds up.
So chess.
Chess. Chess is one.
Yeah,
chess is definitely one.
But
chess is one. But the reason it's not as complex is because it's one versus one.
It's not as complex. You don't think chess is more? So you think League's more complicated than chess? You can say that flat out. What do you reckon, Curtis?
There's a lot of variables.
I literally feel like I can't because I don't coach it. I don't play at the highest level. I feel like I think it's unfair to have that statement, Curtis. I think that you're super biased, honestly.
Oh, I'm trying to think about this objectively. Okay, if we go very deep here, Nathan, this might break the system, you know?
We're going to break the code in the matrix.
We're in like some virtual reality and like just breaks the system.
Yeah, it's like a little glitch.
It's like if you think about the amount of decisions made in a
short period of time.
Yeah, okay. Think about, break it down, dude. Come on.
Yeah, Nathan. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
In chess,
yeah.
one move. Think about Lee in a landing phase.
Whoa, Curtis, but there's a lot of, they're replaying lots of situations in their head, though. Like, Think about speed chess, right?
Yeah.
I would say they're probably making the equal amount of decisions.
Okay, yeah, they are doing a lot of decisions to make that one move. But, hear me out here, in League, if we get very detailed, if I click, a click is 0.5 seconds or something like that, way less. If I click one way, that's going to influence the decision of that person's clicking, right? This happens, and over the course of 10 seconds, there are because this is where your lane positioning threat comes into play. It's like there are so many micro little things happening across the map in every lane, in every role at the same period of time. I just can't, in terms of like raw data. If you were to like somehow put all of chess data and code into a program and then all of League data and code into a program, it feels like League would just have so much more, wouldn't it? Because if you think about this, chess has basically infinite possibilities, right? Like the game is not solved. It can't be solved. It's just there's too many variables. But not only, I think League would obviously have that factor.
Of course, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But not only does it not has that factor, the game literally changes. Nathan, chess does not change. The same, the pawn does the pawn things, the knight does the knight thing, queen, and it's the same board.
Mm. Okay, you know? I guess that the change factor definitely adds a layer of complexity. Because like, let's say if you're trying to,
and every patch, Nathan, every patch changes.
Let's say if you created an AI for chess, it has the same like rules to follow, right? But if you were to create an AI for League, you would need to train the AI to learn something.
That's how AI works, though. AI works, doesn't it? It's called artificial intelligence because it learns of itself. It learns of its experiences. That's how AI works.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how all of them work, no matter what the code is.
All right. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, yeah. But
we don't want to go outside our knowledge range here.
Okay. And I'm trying to help your argument here, Curtis. I'm trying to put together why the change aspect of League makes it more complicated than anything else.
Well, like I said, man, like I just think that okay, whether or not it's more or less complex, it doesn't even fucking matter at the end of the day. I don't really care about that argument either. It really doesn't even mean anything. It's interesting, right, but it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, you're right.
But how do we come to this? We'll talk about the fundamentals, don't we?
Fuck if I know, Curtis. Yeah, everything stemmed from threat. That's it.
Everything's from threat. So
say something else about threat, Curtis. We could just tangent on the next thing.
Well, no. What I would want, I think, right now, I think we leave it at that.
Okay.
And I think we hear back from. See the discussions that flow.
Well, at the end of the day, like this is what you're trying, and this is what I've been thinking about now because of this discussion. How can I create some sort of model that creates consistent results? Can teach people up to a certain level very easily by teaching the fundamentals of League of Legends? That's not me sitting there telling someone you shouldn't have done this or this is bad.
Okay,
you can do this.
Also, okay, the reason this motivates me as well is if you think about it. If you were to create right now a course, say there was like a full course from start to finish in League, I don't think one exists, or definitely one doesn't exist, where it doesn't actually just use techniques to teach concepts already.
Well, if I was ever to do that, I would teach a champion first, and then you teach the game through the champion. Didn't we agree that this is champion mastery is the key thing?
Yeah. But I feel like there's a whole... But we wouldn't be able to explain the theory effectively, Nathan. That's the problem. Because, like, there's so many questions... Well,
through a champion.
Yeah, we wouldn't actually be able to explain the theory, underlying theory. Because if you go deeper and deeper and deeper, I feel like it would get to a point where, like if someone was really confused as to why things were happening... Okay, let's do an interesting thought experiment. Let's just say we get someone from, like, the fucking 16th century come, and they've, like, never...
Seen a computer game.
Yeah, they've never seen a computer game before. So everything is just like, what the fuck?
Never touched a keyboard, never touched a mouse.
Yeah. Where would you start?
That's a damn good question, Curtis.
Where would you start? Where would you start? So overwhelming. It's like, yes,
put your hands like I wouldn't even. You have to explain what a keyboard and a mouse is for first, Curtis.
Okay. Let's even just fast forward. Let's just say we spent some time with them working out how to refine their keyboard and mouse skills. Let's just say they were competent with keyboard and mouse.
They know how to press buttons and they understand.
They know how to. They know how to press buttons without looking at the keyboard. Let's just say that we got to that by a bit. That's already done.
Yep. Okay. Next step.
So we're just getting to the game and we're trying to explain the game. We're trying to explain the game and like why champions can like win trades. Like how, like what the fuck do you start? Where do you start?
No, you don't start there, dude. You start with how do you control
your resources. Character?
No, how do you control your character? That's number one.
Okay, number one. Control your character.
Control, like right clicking and showing the abilities, what each ability does. You need to learn the abilities.
Okay, so this is the thing, Nathan. We could do this, right? We could probably theorycraft here saying, all right, we're going to learn how to control your character. This is what abilities do. This is in order to cast abilities, you need resources.
Items. These are the items you need.
Items, whatever. Okay, cool. We can go down that route. We can even go down that route. That's fine. I don't think that would be a problem. But then it starts. But this is where it gets chaotic. When the players actually start to know what the absolute basics of the game, they know that you got to kill the Nexus.
Yeah.
Then at that point, it feels like most people are so fucking overwhelmed. And you would have clients that have so many different problems based off their experiences.
Of course.
Yes.
So like that, they artificially create their own problems, which is mostly mental blocks or mental, you know. They've these invisible narratives that we talk about all the time on this podcast that they've told themselves.
But I kind of feel like throwing this one out there. I kind of feel like if players really understood League of Legends at like an incredibly deep level, they wouldn't have these mental blocks, would they?
Yeah, I mean, because
they could see it logically. It's like, well,
because then you understand why you're winning and losing very clear. It's not blaming
exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's a failure on my behalf when people get tilted still from watching my content because it means I haven't made it clear enough. I haven't made it clear enough because my goal isn't like it's kind of like what Gary Vee says about his content. At the end of the day, with people on my YouTube, I want someone to like not have to watch every single one of my videos in a way. I want them to, obviously, because it helps me being like, it's my livelihood. But at the same time, I want them to be able to learn by themselves and like use my content to help them teach themselves. I don't want them to have to rely on my content.
Never watch a video. They can watch a couple of videos and they never have to watch a Curtis video again.
Exactly.
It's just like, oh, that's his philosophy. That makes sense. Bam. This works for me.
And I don't feel like I've been able to successfully do that, which is fine. I'm learning. I'm still on that journey and I can't expect to have done that in 1 year.
You can't do that because you say the game's about change. You have to keep watching Kurt's videos because you're going to keep telling them how to keep playing the game at a high level. So that's never possible.
Okay, so this is weird then. So then goes in a big fuck around circle. Where it's like, okay, is there even fundamentals illegal? Do the fundamentals change?
Oh, shit. That's such a good question now, Curtis. We're
back to square one. Because they could easily, the next day, Nathan, say that like, you know, they could just change the values, the gold values on like the jungle camps and make it so jungles can never really be a carry.
Yeah, that doesn't change the fundamentals because then your job is just to help someone else get more threat.
So maybe there is this, maybe the fundamentals do still exist regardless of changes. That's why they're called fundamentals.
And even if, Curtis, you're getting less jungle experience, at the end of the day, you're versus an opponent who's also the jungler or is also not getting, but if you get more resources then you're stronger than him, then it's suddenly six versus four.
Well, I always bring it back to the most fundamental level in League. I always say your goal is to be stronger than your
counterpart. That's right. Yeah. That's really important now. Cause that brings it back to the best line. You're doing it's five versus five. You're experiencing the exact same.
It's actually not that. You're not trying to be stronger than your counterpart. You're trying to be more impactful than your counterpart.
Impactful.
No, yeah, you're trying you're trying to do your job better than they can do their job.
I don't really like it. Yeah. That's
what it is. Cause we're not doing the same things. If I play Twist of Fate and he's playing,
you have different jobs.
We literally have different jobs.
Different jobs. That's right.
And sometimes
you're getting the max juice out of your champion, which is the tool. That's why champion mastery is so important, right?
And some games I only need to do my job to like a mediocre level to win that game. And other games I'll have to do my job to a fucking insane degree to win that game.
Yeah.
And so this is the way League works sometimes. you know? And you're right, league champs are just a tool to win a game. That's a tool. So, Nathan, the reason champion mastery can never be a fundamental is because, again, it's champions.
Yeah, specific. I said it's not a fundamental. Yeah, it's never a fundamental. But I'm saying is that you learn, you have to learn the fundamentals through
champions.
A champion.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, if you can't control your
play the game without playing a champion.
Yeah, you can't play the game. You can't rock up and play like nothing. Like, it's like you're playing a minion.
Yeah, you can't play a minion.
Unless you're versing another minion, then you can't properly play the game. Because then you'll do your job better than the other minion.
I feel like I've just entered this conversation more confused than I'm more confused now. Sorry, I've left this. I'm going to leave this conversation more confused than when I entered in.
That's great, Curtis. This is
like, I have no fucking idea, man. I have no idea about this. So
it's gonna take you decades, Curtis. Hopefully, league is around for decades, and then you can figure this out. You know, because the jiu-jitsu has been around for ages. You know, so here's the luxury to get to that level. But maybe we're just amateurs, Curtis. I've been doing this for only a couple of years.
So let's put a pin in it and let's say what. Is below threat, or is there another word for threat?
Is there something another way? Is there another word, or is there another even fundamental before that of League of Legends?
Yeah, before threat. Yeah,
yeah.
That's what I want to know. Okay, so we'll leave it at that. And one last thing, a little caveat here. Not a caveat, like a follow-on point. What about impact? Like, you know when you hear some people say, he's just a high-impact player. What does that mean?
Define it.
Like, you hear commentators say, you hear you talk about, you know, we just in solo queue, that guy, it doesn't matter what he plays, he's just more impactful. Impact. Game impact. What does impact mean?
Understanding limits. Game knowledge. Pushing limits.
Is it how they use their character to influence the map, or like rather than their lane? They're maximizing what their champion can do.
Pushing limits.
Okay, maybe in more deeper level, they know where to distribute their resources to bring about the most change.
Yes. Yeah.
Because think about. As a jungler, right? A high impact jungler, they have trillions of things they can do throughout the game. But they know, okay, given my resources, given how my gold, given my strength, where exactly do I need to be and what exactly do I need to do to create the most change in the game or favorable change in the game? That's what impact is, right?
I'd say that's a good definition. I'm happy with that definition.
And how do you get better at being impactful?
Game knowledge is the first thing that comes to my mind.
I was thinking about mental APM.
Mental actions per minute. Yeah.
And I hate using this term, mechanics. But it is relevant here. Mental APM, the amount of information that you can process. But it's not even that. It's like the information processing is just one part of it. You got to be able to use that information.
That's right.
So it's game knowledge plus mental.
That's where APM game knowledge comes in. That's right. You don't know how to use that information if you don't have the game knowledge. Plus all the experience. All the experience.
So if we were to break down League into like neat like categories of like if you would have envisioned like the ultimate League of Legends player, and there's like categories of skills, there's like mental APM, then there's game knowledge, then there's the actual micro mechanics,
you know. And is experience one, Curtis? Because there's no way you can get good at the game without experience. Or is that just like a you don't need to talk about it because it's just obvious? Because you need to put yourself in so many situations so that you can actually understand what to do. Because you can't explain every situation. It's impossible.
No, but I think that there are certain people that don't need as many experiences as others.
Of course, because at the end of the day, there's people that have played 20,000 games. Oh, I mean, but then you can say that, well, no, I haven't had the same experiences. Let's say if you're someone in silver who's played 10,000 games, they've missed out on so many experiences at the higher level, so they don't have the same amount of experiences because they haven't been Diamond before, you know?
Well, that was actually one of the controversial things in Direwolves, where players... Well, my theory was that it'd be better to go to sleep than play those extra two or three shit quality games when you're half asleep. But
Well, you can always argue, well, then they're not getting a proper experience because they're not fully focused, right? That was your argument. Like, yeah, they're not. Then they're saying, well, Curtis, I can play more games. I have more opportunities for more experiences. But like you're not going to learn. You're not going to remember every single experience, are you?
Well, I don't know. Well, the theory was. Me getting something, even if I get one thing from those three games, is better than me resting. That was their theory.
That's right. Yeah.
Which, how do you argue that?
Well, no, but then it's like, well, then you get less sleep. So then you're less focused the next tomorrow? Day, which has an impact tomorrow. I mean, that's all I can think of. That's the counter argument.
Yeah. Cause it always felt like when I watched those games, like, holy shit, those games are so unrealistic. What the fuck are you going to take from those games? But then he's like, yeah, there's like that one skirmish, that one tower dive that was really interesting. And now I know how to do that next time, which is fair enough. But then you got to weigh it up. You know, how much sleep do you need to perform the next day? And that's where it gets, that's where things get a little, a bit sleepy. That's where things get a little bit complicated. And that's where sports science comes into play. Anyway, so I think we got enough on this. We're going down a bit of a rabbit hole there. I think you have any more topics that are a little bit lighter?
I heard you say the other day, Curtis. I heard you say the other day you were surprised you got top 10 challenger. You finished top 10 challenger in the season. Why?
Okay. Okay. So for me this year, obviously I wasn't a hardcore solo queue player the past few years.
You're coaching. Yeah.
I was literally coaching. I was a head coach, right? So I hadn't had the luxury of playing the game 24/7. Okay. So when you get to the top of Challenger, most of the time you're versing players who get to play all the time, whether they're a young kid who has like a lot of time to play and they play all the time, or they're literally a pro player. Okay. Especially on Oats, when you think about it, top 50 players is literally, you know, basically all the pro players.
That's right.
There's 18, 5. So there's a lot of high elo, and then that's not even including the academy and things like that. So I was thinking to myself, okay, well, given I haven't had the luxury of being playing league for the past few years, being a head coach, and you know, challenger on our server is only 50 slots, so I'm versing players regardless of the quality of how good or bad they are. They still, in terms of raw time, play the game way more than me. Okay, so then I'm thinking to myself, okay, let's just have a crack. So I had a crack. I started playing, and I was kind of stuck around mid grandmaster, mid to low grandmaster for the majority of the season. Like, I sometimes bounced up to low challenger at around 550 LP, but I never.
Do you think max you would be like low challenger?
Yeah, I thought, okay, maybe I could get low challenge if I really try and I focus on champion mastery and things like that. But even then, I was like, holy shit, this season's really hard. There's not many slots in challenger this season. It's going to be tricky. And my goal, I want to get challenger every season, because I've been challenger every season now for the past seven.
You didn't get challenger, right? Because that's the way you always say, Nathan, I wish I got challenger season three like you. Because then I would have a perfect little OPGG where you get challenged on everything.
Because challenges came out in season three.
Yeah.
So I didn't get it in season three, and I only got it from season 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and now 10. And I was like, I really want challenger to have that on my OPGG. But anyway, so I was during the season, I was like, this is tough. I don't see myself breaking into the high elo challenger games. And the reason that was the case, I think, was because I had the fixed mindset to improving micro. I thought my micro was just fucked, and there was no way out.
You're a boomer, Curtis.
Yeah,
you're past your prime. There's no way you can possibly your fingers aren't possibly can click quick faster than they can already can because you're a boomer. Yeah.
That's literally what I thought.
That's what you told yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, or subconsciously anyway. I didn't say it like that, but I subconsciously thought something like that where I couldn't actually improve at it. Then I started really focusing on my improvement. Taking it, like getting very in depth with my reviews and really looking at all my trades and being very specific, like, what is happening here? And why am I losing these games? And I had so many, even you could hear me, Nathan, like so many times where I'm like, I'm just in a hole. You know, I was in huge holes. I went from like 400 all the way back to 150 LP and then climbed all the way back, and it was rough. And then, yeah, I ended up getting top 10. And I look back, I'm like, holy shit, I was in a huge hole. And I just never would have thought, given the situation I was in and given the mentality I had and everything, I was like, thought I was done. Yeah, thought I was done. And all because of that fixed mindset I had, or fixed mentality, fixed mindset towards improving the micro element of the game. And because micro now means more than it has ever been. Because people's micro is just so much better. Okay, no, I actually think it's this. It's less that their micro is better. It's that they are able to utilize their micro better.
Better, that's right, yeah.
So think about it. My micro was really good in season 6, right? Season 5, season 4. My micro was really good, but I didn't know how to utilize it. But now people know how to utilize it. So that's why I thought that was interesting as well. And you know when we actually started the conversation, Nathan? You know where it actually all started? It was from preseason changes. That's where the whole conversation started.
Yeah, because I said something about, because then you went to the tangent and then because
what you said was,
something about the game hasn't changed. Yeah.
So did you want to quickly touch on that or not?
Well, no, I was actually just looking up because you know, you said you were surprised you finished Challenger, right?
Hmm.
And I was just trying to think back, like I just had a quickly flash by of like where did this whole like 11 months go? Because I feel like for some reason, I feel like it's still February, March for some reason, because the whole COVID thing, all that sort of stuff, right?
Hmm.
And I just looked up now on March the 20th. I posted, I hit Grandmaster, right? 100 LP, okay?
Okay.
Right? And then just yesterday, I hit Masters. I'm 0 LP Master. That's why I'm finishing the season Masters 0 LP. I'm not playing any more of that account. I'm finishing Master, right?
So that's like net minus 100 over that many months.
Like, what the fuck happened to my season, Curtis? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I was thinking that was just the beginning. Think about this in March, dude. I was like,
yeah, you were telling me you're going to make, you're like rank one shit.
You know, I was like, you know, that typical Nathan, like, you know, I can get rank one whenever I want. But holy shit, dude. What is
March 10, you're 100 LP
Grandmaster. And it took me like a week to get there as well. It was just from like Diamond 4 to like Grandmaster. And it was super easy as well. Just no stress. Can you believe this?
Nathan.
And then I go on the next 7-8 months. Bouncing around. There were excuses, but it's like I was making champion guides. I was learning other champs. Like I did my Xin Zhao guide. I can't believe I made a Xin Zhao guide, by the way. Like,
why?
Like Xin Zhao, the shittest champion League of Legends. I know. You know, I went back, Curtis, and I found the champions I started this. Guess the champion that I made at the beginning of this season?
Hecarim.
Jarvan. I had like a 48% win rate on Jarvan, and then I switched to Rek'Sai, and then that's how I got Grandmaster with Rek'Sai, with like a 70% win rate. Jarvan, I was playing. That's what I was thinking back. It's like, why was I playing Jarvan? Why did I think it was good? I was Jarvan was my main for the whole set of like the pretty much the whole season. just like my mind is just fucked this from this season, Curtis. Like I feel like for some reason next season I actually feel like I know what I'm doing.
Yeah,
there's like zero champion master in there. There's no consistency in some sort of schedule. I play whenever I wanted. I was learning other champs. And then just now I just honed in on Nunu Hecarim and I pretty comfortably got to master. It wasn't that hard. And I'm just thinking like, what the fuck, dude, this season for me, honestly, like it's just I'm so excited to hit the reset button next season. Like, honestly,
you've got, okay, you are so good at just not getting out of your own way. Or you're absolutely so good at being in your own way.
Yeah,
you
know? I'm a master of it. I will block myself at all costs.
Like, I've never known anyone to go to this extent to just fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you've literally mastered the art of, like, shooting yourself in the foot. Like, you're okay. Like, for some reason, this is where your brain works, I feel like. It's like, okay, I know what I'm doing is wrong,
But I'll keep doing it. I won't change.
But I don't know why, though. I don't know why. So it's like, you know, you even know what you're doing is wrong. So if I would like turn around,
I think I know why. I just don't care for some reason.
So this is what happened. I could see you walk past your room and like see you like autopilot games, and I could like spin you around in your chair and ask you, what are you doing? And you'd probably say, oh, I'm just like playing this game of League. I'm like, are you trying? You're like, no. Is this bad? Yeah. And then you go back to doing it.
Yeah. Or I'll change it for a game, but then I'll just go back to my old habits super, super quickly.
So what's going on here, Nathan? Just tell, explain to me your mind.
Give me another 2 months, and I'll have an answer for you, right? And that's what I'll share on the podcast as well. The difference when I get actually good at the game next season, which I'm going to spend a lot more time on, I'll have an answer for you then, Curtis.
So you pride yourself on being mentally strong.
Yeah. What is this? You know what I think it was, Curtis? I think I never really had a goal. I think that's huge. That's it. I think that's as simple as it is. It was just to learn. My goal was to learn champions. And once I learned it to a point I could make a guide on it, I was satisfied. And then I'll just move on to the next champion.
So for me, I my goal was 750 LP Challenger, right?
Yeah.
So you never had a number or a rank?
No. Did you actually want a challenger? Yeah, but I didn't really want it. I think that was just it, to be honest. And then I had a whole shitstorm with my champion pool, my playstyle and that sort of stuff, which obviously didn't help.
So between the autopilot and games for some reason, between the no gold, between the no crisis. Champion mastery.
Yeah, identity crisis of how to play League Legends. Identity
crisis and that as well. You've just like...
Equals sitting in diamond for most of the season. But then as soon as I put my mind to it, bam, master tier. And I feel like I could easily climb much higher. I can get at least 100, 200 LP.
Well, that backs up my theory. Well, my theory is two things here. Most players that are Diamond 1, like the difference between Diamond 1 to Challenger, yes, obviously there's a massive mechanical difference in certain roles and, you know, there's a knowledge aspect, there's all that. But the mentality aspect and the mindset aspect from Diamond 1 to Challenger means way more.
Yeah.
It's huge. It's actually just straight up massive. And but my other theory is that most players sit, you know, three divisions below where they would normally be. Because of mentality issues, and they don't play their, they don't actually try and play their best.
So three divisions is like 300 LP. So I'll be like 300 LP.
That's correct.
Yeah, which makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I like that theory, Curtis.
And so for someone who's gold, like someone's plat four, they could easily be like, you know, plat one. If they actually really try hard and played with absolute intensity. Yes, plus minus, you know, probably it could be two divisions, could be even one division, depending on how tiltable that person is. But I'd say in my experience, most players are not playing at their best for the majority of games that they play. So yeah, Nathan, you got to really just like, cause this is, I could just easily see this happening again, by the way. Like I have no faith in you just saying like, I'm going to fix it.
Sorry, I'll fix it. Yeah.
Like, you're just using that as an excuse that it's a new season?
No, no. New season, new year, new me, dude. It's like New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions. I'm going to go to the gym for a week and then, bam, you're back to your old habits. Anyways, Curtis, we'll see. We'll see. I got a lot to work on, but this is the part of the podcast, Curtis. I'll be sharing my progress with everyone, all right?
And I want you to really be brutally honest with yourself, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have similar mental blocks.
Absolutely.
Like, I've seen there's people in my Discord that have some insane mental blocks that I'm trying to figure out and help them with.
Mm.
You know, and one of them actually was super interesting. I got a DM from Psyker today. He's like a long-term coaching client that I've had. And he's just like the definition, like, whenever I like did coaching sessions with him, I just could tell it's not in game for him. I'm trying to figure it out. And
well, there's obviously his parts in game as well, right?
Obviously, yes. But
it's mainly, you're saying it's mainly mental blocks.
No, well, his schedule, his routine was always trash. I always told him that he spams way too many games and he autopilots games and he plays with music and all that bullshit.
Yeah.
But one element of his was, as soon as he dies, he's not able to identify what his role is.
Got it.
Like, it's even in general, before he dies, he's not. And you know what happens? If you don't know if you're not able to identify what your role is in games, then your default response is to panic.
And then you are going to make mistakes because you're panicking.
you're gonna make mistakes.
You're not clear. You have no clarity. You don't know how to win the game anymore. It's just coin flip. Everything's just coin flip.
Everything's coin flip. There's no consistency, and you're gonna compensate for every play that you see.
Yeah.
Take and then you get panic, and then you get
what elo is he?
He's like plat one. He's been plat one for so long.
All right, got it.
I'm pretty sure he got diamond. I'm pretty sure he got diamond recently, but like he's plat one for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's making progress, but like the thing with him is I really just want to work with him on his mentality stuff, you know?
Yeah.
His ability to understand his role in games. And that's actually one I tried to make a video on, by the way, and I've got it in my channel. I can't remember what the title was called. I think it was like understanding win conditions or game plans, creating a game plan. But making a video on that was really hard because it's so situational. It's champ specific.
Of course, yeah.
Very
champ specific. There's so many variables, yeah. Choosing a win condition and things can change in the game. You could have a unique situation that is a win condition that you never see ever again.
Definitely. I mean, I would say that happens most games.
I'd
say most games, like I'm in a situation where like I have to do something I've never done before. Especially in high elo games. And that's why, by the way, I think champions that are adaptable are the best for solo queue.
That are versatile. Yeah.
In mid lane, anyway. Examples? I don't know about jungle, but Orianna.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Graves, Nidalee, and all that sort of, like build diversity. Yeah.
Rune diversity.
Pathing, they can choose to invade. They don't have to. Yep. Like Kindred, all sort of stuff. Like, that's literally the reason.
And that's also why the scaling is super interesting. I don't know if you thought about this. Scaling is simultaneously like important, but it's not for the reason you would think it is. So it's important, but not for the reason you think it is. It's important not because you know it's the win condition of scaling. It's because you have the option to scale. It's the option of being able to scale.
That's right.
Why I view scaling. And this is why champions like Echo and Akali and like Silas are so good. It's like they spike a lot of the champions off one item.
Yeah, they can still do stuff. But they also can scale.
But they can also just literally hard farm. Nothing happens at three item form. They can be an absolute powerhouse.
You're not on a timer. You're never on a timer.
And that's the crazy. That's like what I feel best champ. Like Orianna. It's the same thing. And that's why 610. So 610's that EU Challenger guy that I'm helping out. He was like Echo one trick. One of the best Echoes I've seen. And the way he interprets Echo's winning games is actually, it's like, yes, he can play aggressive if he really wants to and take opportunities, but he's completely fine just hardcore farming for the first 20 minutes of the game, playing off like a 2-3 item swag, one-shotting people, getting protobelt into Nashes into death cap. And it got me thinking, I'm like, why is that so effective? And it makes sense. It makes sense for all of those sorts of champions. That's why they're so effective in solo queue. It's the threat of scaling. Same for Kindred. Like you said, Kindred Graves. They scale really well in certain games. And it's the ability to identify certain games. There's a game where you know you don't scale. You don't have to play like that. You know? That's what I love. And that's why those champions are so good in solo queue. And that's what I love about Orianna. And that's why I had so much success with Orianna, more so than any of my champions. The reason I had success with Galio wasn't the same reason. And the reason I had success with Twist of Fate was not the same reason as well. Orianna specifically had success because of that. I'm not to say that, you know, there's certain champions that just because they don't have the scaling factor, it doesn't mean you can't win with them.
Yeah.
But this is just, I would say, the strongest solo queue champions, as a rule of thumb, have this option at the moment, the way the game is played. Because there's some games where dragons don't get taken. You get to 35 minutes and then like two or three dragons are taken or something like that. And it's not a big deal. There's some games where like all dragons are taken from very early within the game. They're already threatening like a dragon soul and you have to team fight. And the ability to do either is so big. Anyway, you got waffled on and off there.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, Curtis. That's why, again, we see the current meta. Again, I'm so excited for the next season. Like, what happens, what changes, especially with the new items.
I'm so excited.
So the next podcast we do, Curtis, the patch will be live. We probably would have played it for a day or two.
I'm so excited, man.
Are you just going to sit in your room and just play all day?
I don't know, man. I got to really be strategic here.
Yeah.
Because you've got a lot to think about.
Yeah, there's a lot
to think about as well. Yeah, I'm going to think about it.
All right. Questions answered, Tom. You ready, Curtis, for some
sure am.
Help out some Broken by Concept listeners?
Sure am.
All right, let's see if this works. Bam, technology. All right, so I'm going to read out the whole question, Curtis, because that's what we agreed on is best, and I did see some comments about this, so let's just read these emails from start to finish. Hello, I'm Wilderness from Coach Curtis's Discord. Why was Azir so bad this meta, and why did teams keep picking it even up to the final? Why does the meta seem so defined, and why is it so hard for professional teams to think outside the box and create unique win conditions outside of what is defined? It just reduces the competitive league into what can copy a dominant style the best. Thanks for all the work you put in for the league community.
Good question. So I think there's a few questions within this one. Let's start with the first one. Why was
Azir so bad this meta?
What do you mean? So I'm assuming this meta he means by solo queue. But yeah, I don't even agree with the statement.
Yeah.
I don't even agree with the statement. I think Azir is actually good.
For what reason?
Okay. This is the way I view Azir, right? Azir is very unique in the sense that he has such a high skill cap that this is why you see Azir players in high elo across the world occasionally, like Azir one tricks, because the champion has such a high skill cap. Between and Azir, in a weird way, does have the versatility aspect that we mentioned just before, where you can go Comet and play for lane with like a Lost Chapter rush or whatever, and play for poke and adapt to certain matchups. You can also go lethal tempo, play for perma priority, and you know, have a little bit more aggression, but also scale into mid to late game. You could also go Halo Blades and play very aggressive in the early lane, in the early game, and even take Ignite. Some of the high elo Azir is playing incredibly aggressive with
him. I can't contest Krabs with Azir. Am I right or wrong in saying this? This is my mindset when it comes to Azir.
Azir should always have priority in nearly basically in every single matchup.
There's so many situations I review. Nine. I was like, I went for that Krab. I had an Azir mid lane. I shouldn't have gone for that.
Azir isn't good at following those early skirmishes, but he should have priority and be able to isolate the one.
Yeah, he did. But like the other guy just ditches the wave and then I just come and go and then we just lose. Yeah.
Azir is actually very good level 6 though. You need to play around Azir's level 6 because Azir has a lot of threat level 6. This is actually why Azir, again, this is kind of ties into the reason why it's picked in the finals. Okay, a few things before we go on to that. Why as well it's not amazing in solo queue and why it's traditionally it's not good in solo queue is because of its inability to adapt to those skirmishes and river skirmishes, and because Scuttles and Dragons and Rift Heralds are so important and that early in on the game, then Azir can be a little bit average. I would say as well, Azir is very feast or famine. Like if you die once or twice or have to blow your flash, it's incredibly hard to come back. And also the other element of it as well is that a lot of assassins just counter Azir. In solo queue anyway. Like champions like Ekko in solo queue do very well into things like Azir. Now that people really understand how to tempo reset and really push the pace of the game. So I would say that there's a few that they're the main few reasons. Now, why is it picked even up to the final? Well, the thing is, Azir has I would say a very unique, like I said, a very unique quality. And the unique quality is that he gets pressure. And pressure is highly valued in competitive play because pressure usually allows your jungler to invade, get deeper wards, control objectives, that sort of thing. And Azir allows you to do that. And the reason Azir gets priority or gets pressure isn't just because of his wave clear. It's because of threat post 6. If you're playing in a mobile mage, something like an Orianna into Azir or a Syndra or a... what's another mage? Anything, like a Victor, whatever it is. You can just straight up die at 6 because you get a Zersect into the lane. And then either which you just flash, you flash it, you have to blow flash, but then you've got flash advantage. Or you don't flash it and you literally just die to a gank. So Azir's gank setup, and the plus in combination with ability to adapt runes to get pressure in lane, better pressure in any matchup, as well as the ability to scale, allows him to be a very viable or very consistent pick within competitive play. Which leads me to the next point, which is why does the meta seem so defined? Why is it so hard for professional teams to think outside the box? So again, this kind of ties into patches. So let's view meta, what meta means. Meta generally is most effective tactics available, right? That's what it stands for. Most effective tactics available. Tactics are just a way of bringing about or completing a certain strategy, okay? And given the way the game works right now, given the strength of Elemental Dragons and Dragon Souls, and given the strength of Rift Heralds, certain champions are picked around it. You can't afford to pick champions like Veigar and Vladimir and things that can't like River Skirmish and Team Fight and things like that, or like at least get pressure, because then how's your team going to be able to contest those dragons, prevent the enemy from stacking dragons, or prevent the enemy from doing that Rift Herald? How? So generally, why it's hard to innovate or why it's hard to create unique win conditions is because the way the game is designed, there was always just an optimal way to win, but it always stems from objectives. So if things like Rift Herald and Dragon didn't exist in the game, then the game would be very open. It would be very weird. It would be like, you could probably play
you're just playing Nivea, like back to the season 3, dude. I mean, sorry, yeah. Season 2. Remember what we saw? You just play AFK Farm.
There's AFK Farm. And the reason this is the case, the reason Riot wanted this way, is because it's more exciting.
I mean, it's more exciting. I think the game is in a terrible state if everyone's just playing. You're playing 50-minute games, 60-minute games every game.
Hmm.
When was the last time? Like, think about in Season 2, Curtis, there was like 50-minute games was normal.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was shit. So yeah. But does that make sense, Nathan? What I'm trying to get at here is that's why it's hard, it's difficult to innovate.
It is. I mean, okay, well, this is my answer. This is my answer to why I think it's so hard for professional teams to think outside the box. Three things. It's risky. I mean, you don't want to lose your job over committing to something, right? Gaining confidence for winning scrim stuff that you already know works is too important. And then number three is people don't play enough solo queue. What do you think about that, Curtis?
I think you're spot on with the risk factor, because coaches as well, not just players. Generally, the strategy comes a lot of the time will start from the coaches. You don't want to tell your players like play all this crazy shit, and then the people at the management say, why are we playing this stuff? And then someone's going to get scapegoated if it doesn't work.
Mm.
And nowadays in esports,
I mean, there's no culture for thinking outside the box.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. What's the word?
People don't feel safe because
encouraged.
Think about how often coaching staff members change and players change.
Mm.
When's the last time you saw a roster stick together for like 3-4 years? G2 stuck together.
What are you talking about? 2 years, man. If you stick there for 2 years, you're in the history books for League of Legends rosters.
It's like G2 made history, right?
Yeah.
But one of the only teams to go back-to-back to finals with the same roster.
That's right. I think it was one of them. Ever. Yeah. I think they are. Yeah. I think they're one of the only teams.
Right. So, yeah, something like that. So, I think that's a big one. Like
In the West, 100%. In Korea and China, I can't talk because I don't know enough about them. Korea, SKT probably had the same roster a couple of times.
I don't want to comment on that. I don't know enough about it. But there's one thing that you mentioned also was good, is the confidence in scrims.
Hmm.
So we learned this the hard way. In Direwolves, sometimes what would happen is we'll try all these strategies all week. You try strategies all week, you get to Friday, you play on Saturday, and then the team's like, well, what are we playing? Like, what are we playing this weekend? I mean, we've lost all this. We've played so many different compositions. We've tried all these strategies, and like some of them work, some of them haven't. Like, we just want to play what works. And sometimes creating strategy takes a lot of time. And if you take all this time trying strategies that you don't even know will work, by the time you come around on Saturday, the players, a lot of the time, they just won't feel confident. They won't feel comfortable. And then the players, so the coaching staff will just be like, well, why don't we just play what works? Why do we just, like, in Korea, they're playing Ornn every game with this. Why do we just play that? Like, why are we giving them Ornn if it's so strong? Why are we doing some niche counterpick? Like, it's very difficult to get players on the same page. And I completely understand that. Like, imagine being on stage and playing this crazy comp. And yeah, that's where it gets really difficult creating buy-in within a team. Like, everyone needs to be bought in with that this is a great strategy. So there's a bunch of factors there. I hope this kind of answers the question. But I wouldn't say Azir is overly weak right now. Yes, it is hard, but it's definitely not weak. And it's a champion that requires a lot of champion mastery.
All right, next question here is from Sam. He's a Zed main from Sweden. Hey, guys, I have a question that I have thought about a lot as the season has gone on. It's not really relevant in terms of self-improvement, but here it goes. What do you think of being able to choose an exclusive lane when you queue up? What I mean by this is when you go into a lobby, you have the option to only choose mid for example, so only choose literally one role. You can't off roll. I don't think anyone likes autofill, especially the people who actually want to improve on the game. It's kind of like when you play a lot of different champions you haven't mastered and still trying to learn macro. I understand that playing other lanes makes you better in your own, like with the champions, but it's just an important factor in every game. The negative thing would be the queue times, obviously, but to make it a little bit better, at least there could be an option to be open to autofilled roles. And if you don't use this option, you have to really understand that the queue times could be insane. Hope this wasn't too long or relevant. Loves our show. Improved in almost all these areas of gameplay. Awesome to you, Sam. What do you think, Curtis?
I think they could probably implement this on some of the larger servers, but I don't think it would be viable.
At the end of the day, I mean, your point was the negative thing with queue times. I mean, that's a huge point. You simply wouldn't be able to play that. In high elo, it's not possible.
No, I think in some of the regions, yes, you could. Not in high elo. I think that in EU
and China, you probably couldn't.
Yeah, I think EU, China, and Korea, you could definitely do it.
But it sort of happens that way. You get
even in most games. I'll say even NA.
No way, dude. NA.
You know, I'm pretty sure the NA server population is quite similar to Korea, by the way.
No, but it's about people that play the game. Korea, there's a lot of Korean Challenger games happening all the time. In NA, not so much.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's about volume of games and how much people play. People sit on the ELO in NA Challenger. They just sit there and just play their 10 games. Got it?
I mean, I would be open to Riot experimenting with this to see what the queue times actually are like.
Well, I mean, the system's design, yeah, that would be interesting. It's like an extra, like let's say queue times in gold are 1 minute. That might make it 3 minutes. I think that's worth it.
Or maybe, yeah, maybe it is worth it. Or maybe they execute, they only implement this higher up. Maybe they only implement it for Diamond Plus games where people, by then people are only really serious about the game. Because maybe this was just a lot of casual players who just don't really care. They're just playing from bronze all the way to plat, you know? And they just kind of want to play the game casually in a way. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, I think the opposite goes. This should be a low elo thing, not a high elo thing. Because really? If you're high elo, you should have the expectation to play other roles. You have to play other roles. No, I think
champion mastery means more in high elo.
It does mean more.
Because you get more one tricks.
Okay.
That's the way I do it.
Okay.
I mean, I think if it could be done, I think it would be great.
Yeah.
If it could be done.
You could only choose one role. You think it would be great. You think that there's no value to learning another role?
I mean, think about, you think a quarterback in NFL is like going to be wasting time learning how to be like a running back? Like, yes, I'm not saying you get no value. Obviously, there'll still be stuff to learn there. But like you said, like, it would be just much better to hone in. I view that personally. Maybe I'm wrong. That's just my hunch. And I haven't really thought about this. And I feel like this is a deeper thing that I maybe need to understand more. But my hunch is that, there is so much to learn in a role. And if you think about
So why is it not better at low elo then for people to get to high elo in the first place? Isn't that more friendly because they're not forced to play an off role that they just literally just have no idea because they've only spent X amount of time.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they haven't played the game much. That's true. Well, you can see it for both. You can see it for both Nathan, low elo and high elo, but for differing reasons.
Right.
So in low elo, it'd be good because they haven't played much of the game, so they're going to have literally zero knowledge in another role. But in high elo, because the level of play is so high, if you get off role, you just get gapped.
Yeah, that's true. Incredibly hard. Yeah. But again, it's just not possible on certain servers because the queue times will be hours.
I think EU, Korea, and Challenger could definitely do it though.
Yeah.
Maybe not NA from what you said, what you've seen.
No, not from what I've seen.
And by the way, Nathan, this is a super interesting thing. I don't know why this reminded me of it, but you know my brother. So my brother plays League occasionally just as a hobby. Like he barely plays the game, right? Mm. He randomly started playing League for fun during COVID, right? And because like he has more time, he couldn't go out and stuff. And he started playing top lane. And he only plays Urgot. And he got to, like, Diamond.
He's Diamond 4.
Randomly. He's Diamond 4.
Really?
And he got bored of Diamond.
Really?
He just randomly plays Urgot.
How long?
He's never watched a video. He's never watched the video. Taught himself.
He learned himself, yeah.
And he barely played any games, and he just got to diamond. Playing Urgot top. Which actually leads me to something. He's just a natural gamer, right? My brother's just a natural gamer.
But what elo has he gotten in the past? And what role did he play? Was he a jungler?
He played AD carry.
And what elo was he? He was platinum. That's
like
of the
gold
time.
Low plat.
Okay.
Because he didn't really try.
Yeah.
So he's randomly went to
but
top.
I mean, we also have to say he was a pro CS player. So yeah, he's
a pro Counter Strike player. Yeah.
He understands how to play a game at a high level. Yeah, he's a natural gamer. That's right.
He's a natural gamer, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just find that fascinating.
It is fascinating. And then we have coaching clients that just really struggle. You know what I mean? Like, he's not even trying. He doesn't even care.
Literally playing for fun.
Again, one of our other friends, like, I was actually looking, Ben's Diamond 3 now, Curtis.
Is he?
Yeah.
So Ben just plays for fun. This is another friend from high school.
Oh, sorry. He got demoted just to Diamond 4 again. I think he tilted. But I saw him Diamond 3 the other day.
They're natural gamers, though. They're literally natural gamers.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So, yep, that's a little bit of a sidetrack, Curtis, but good work. Oh, this is a little bit messed up. All right, this is from, I actually don't know who it was from, but I'll let you know, Curtis, for the timestamps. Hey, guys, this is my first season of League, and I've only ranked for the past 2 months, and I was able to reach gold. That's pretty good. Impressive. I'm just curious, what would be realistic goals for each season rank-wise, with the end goal being Challenger? Or in other words, what would be the reasonable amount of time for a player to reach challenge if they have a decent solo queue schedule?
Well, first of all, getting gold in your first season is very impressive.
Is it possible? All right, so let's do an extreme example. Is it possible to get challenge in your first season of ever playing League?
No.
It's not possible, right? Because you don't have enough knowledge. You don't have enough games. Even if you played, what was if you played 5,000 games, that's all you did?
I don't think so.
Still no? Okay. What's the highest you reckon you could go?
I think you could definitely get diamond.
Diamond 4.
It depends. Again, this really depends on the type of player you are. Were you like an ex Dota player?
That's right. Yeah.
Other games, did you play Warcraft? Like what games have you played in the past? So this is where it gets very difficult, because I know there's Dota players. I think I saw a Reddit post one day where it was like a Dota player and he got to like diamond 4 in his first season or something.
Hmm. All right, so how many seasons does it take to get to Challenger, Curtis? Two or three?
For me and for you it was literally two.
But that's irrelevant now because there wasn't enough, because everyone was like dumb and dumber. But now that you're playing against players who've been playing for 10 years.
That's true.
So let's do it relevant right now.
Okay, you say what's right now? Irrelevant right now.
Yeah, if you were to start playing the game right now.
I would say on average, if you really tried, say you started at gold, if you're a gold player this season, I reckon you could easily get to diamond, high diamond.
Next season. And the next season, could he get challenger? If you get into diamond one, you means you're capable of getting challenger.
Definitely could. So what's that? That's 3 years total. Yeah.
Three years. I would say 3 years. Yeah.
About 3 years.
I think 3 years, but pushing four.
Yeah.
I think it's probably more four.
There's such a big gap between diamond
and diamond. Yeah. You just have to think about, you're climbing again from like gold to diamond, but on hard mode, you know?
So diamond to challenger, literally in terms of divisions, all diamond, master, grandmaster, then challenger. Yeah. It's similar to gold to diamond, right?
But the difference is just like how much LP you need.
Raw LP. Yeah. But the difference in skill between a diamond 4 to a challenger is like fucking astronomical.
Yeah, it's a different, you're playing a different game.
I mean, it's like me versus Ben Nathan, a high school friend who's diamond 4. Mm. My brother, who's diamond 4.
Mm.
Like, it's literally, you know, we're talking, the difference is like English Premier League player versus like a fucking minor league, like local under 18 player. It's like huge. So I would say that, three, if you were really talented, I would say if you're really putting in the work and you wanted it very badly, 3 years. I'd say that's quite reasonable. So that would be gold first season.
Gold first, diamond next season. Diamond to master tier next season, then challenge in the next season.
No, I was thinking gold in one season.
Yeah.
High diamond in the next season.
Jesus.
To challenge in the next season, 3.
Jesus Christ, yeah.
I think that's possible.
I disagree with that.
You don't think it's possible?
Possible if you have experience playing Dota and stuff like that. But if you're just being like a casual gamer and maybe this is the first game you're taking seriously, I think 4 years.
Yeah, four.
But jeez, that's a long ass time, dude. That's crazy. It's, I think that's the truth though.
Yeah.
All right. Next question here is from Steven. Hi, Nathan and Curtis. I personally haven't been able to really play LoL in any capacity due to many outside factors like time and mechanical prowess with mass PC availability, but I have been playing stuff like Arena of Valor religiously. What's that? Is that like a... I think that's like a mobile game, is it?
Mobile game.
With Wild Rift coming out soon, I was curious for your opinions on how truly competitively... How truly competitive they are comparatively to PC versions. If you want to frame it differently, do you think mobile MOBAs, Vainglory is one that comes to mind, are comparative to LoL in the same way LoL is comparative to Dota, or like completely dissimilar? For me, I personally, I've found that the quality of LoL content has helped me improve a lot when it comes to reaching the upper echelon of mobile scene. And while games may be different, the translation of skills can be directly compared. Thanks, Stephen.
I mean, I've literally never played.
Like a MOBA on your phone, right?
So take this with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Neither of you, right?
No. I experimented a little bit with like this Chinese version of the game, but other than that, I sucked at that. Like my first couple of times. I thought I'd like sort of understand it, but just playing on a PC and playing on mobile, two different things. Like even if I sort of understood how you sort of win.
In terms of the raw, that's the more micro side.
More micro mechanics, yeah.
I mean, I would say, I mean, I've actually had quite a few people, by the way, believe it or not, come onto my channel from Wild Rift.
Really? Fascinating. Yeah,
I've seen a few comments saying, this helped me in Wild Rift.
It's like your macro strategy and your strategy, your mindset stuff. Maybe it was your mindset stuff. Did they say specifically what?
I can't remember the video. All it said was, it helped me in Wild Rift as well. Thanks. I would say that there would be quite a bit of overlap.
Of course. I think
the concepts
would MOBA is a MOBA, you know.
MOBA, but I think gaming concepts still play. So the reason being concepts, this is why Koreans were so good at League, the coaching staff, is because the concepts from StarCraft flowed onto League. There's concepts and terms and the way you think about a game flows onto the next. Like, if I now the skills I have and the ability to think about a game with League right now would help me learn any game. Like, I would be able to learn any game way faster than what I would be before. Because I just think about the game in a different way. I think about games overall as a different way, in a more direct, fundamental way. So I think, yes, definitely my content would help you and Nathan's content would likely help you. Yes, maybe not directly, but... whether it's the way we're talking about the game or whether it's the underlying principles behind it, like threat and things like that, pressure, they still all apply. Tempo all still applies. For sure.
So do you think it can be more competitive?
The question was, how competitive could they be?
Yeah, to compare to the PC versions.
I think they will be competitive. I think there'll be
a competitive scene. I think so as well.
But I don't think it will be as
competitive. Can it compare even close to how complex? Because at the end of the day, it can't be more complex than the PC version, right?
Yeah, because there's literally less variables. Like, there's less abilities and stuff.
Yeah. The map's smaller. Yeah. It's more simple.
I definitely think it will still be complex, though. Like, I think it will still be a high level. It will still be a high level game with a lot of, I think it will be still very good, very hard, complex, and quite competitive. Wouldn't surprise me, to be honest, if that's the future of, like, because I think the way
the future of esports, you think PC could just die?
No, not the future of esports, but I do think that it's the future of gaming. Because, I'm assuming that there is way more people most people spend way more time on their phone than their PC. The average person. We're talking not non-PC games.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
But, like, this is the gateway to, I think, a lot of people becoming more familiar with games.
And League of Legends. Like, they'll get, like, people maybe go play mobile and then they're like, oh, this is interesting. Like, I want to play the main League of Legends on PC now.
Yeah. So I think it's literally important for the future. It'll be very big in the future.
No, mobile is a huge market. I mean, it's the biggest market in the world right now in terms of technology, right? Apps and that sort of stuff. So, it'd be super interesting. Are you going to play it much, Curtis? You're going to try it out?
I'll have a crack.
Yeah, I have a crack as well.
A casual thing for me, though.
I'm going to say our job's the PC League of Legends version, Curtis, so.
But the thing is, I got to be careful. It's like, well, I'm off my PC, finally getting away from League of Legends. I don't want to.
Yeah. They're going to play more. That's right. You spend all your day on League of Legends. Like, now I'm just going to play the mobile version of League of
Legends. Like I'm in a fucking Black Mirror episode. Like, League of Legends takes over my life, like, in every aspect. Soon I'll be, like, cooking my food through, like, League of Legends somehow. Or, like,
that's right. You'll be, yeah. It's like, you're literally going to be cooking it, like, on the Rift. There'll be some VR thing. You're just cooking, like, on the Rift, dude. Jesus. You're, like, cosplaying as, like, some champion or something like that.
Yep.
All right. There was two more questions here, but I think we'll save those for the next episode, Curtis.
Okay.
Good discussions this episode.
Pretty deep
discussions. Maybe we broke the matrix. Like, we'll walk outside and I'll just be see someone just walking into a wall.
You know what I'm referring to?
What?
Going deep with
Yeah, that's right. Good old Custom G.
Yeah.
That's gonna be it. Oh, actually I'll change the switch. I just love the switch of the scenes here. Let's do this one for this sign off.
No, come on, man.
Go back to this one. All right. All right. Well, that's it for. Oh, by the way, if you want your questions answered, like the segment we just did, you can email us at brokerbyconceptshow@gmail.com, and we could potentially answer your question on the show. We will be back to the couch as soon as we can, but this is a temporary setup. I think that's about it. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you in Broken by Concept episode number 17.
Catch up.